Hello and welcome to the Overtime Heroics Baseball Podcast, Cheap Seats Chatter. I'm your host, Matthias Altman-Kurosaki, and joining me for the first time in 2022, we have Alex Clark. Alex, first things first, how are you doing today?
Well, 2022 has already been to an interesting start, so we're not going to go too far into that. The problem is not much has changed in the realm of baseball in the last few days, but we have seen some very interesting things in sports. Antonio Brown celebrated the new year probably the funniest way you possibly could, but also probably the most idiotic way you possibly could. But, you know, in the realm of baseball, not a whole lot's really new. I mean, we're finally starting to get the snow to finally leave, so thankfully I can actually, you know, drive places again, so that's fun. Just in time to go back to work. Yay, my break was kind of useless.
Well, I mean, over here, it was actually kind of warm January 1st and yesterday, but it is very cold today, and supposedly we could get some snow. I saw some flurries earlier today. Unfortunately, winter is arriving in the Northeast, and that's not always a good thing. It's when it gets cold here, it gets really cold. So, yeah, hopefully this MLB lockout ends soon. You know, we got off to such a fast start this offseason, and then with the lockout, there has been absolutely nothing, and I do not know when baseball will return. So that's that. Today we have an episode of Versus. Obviously, with no news going on, this is what we're going to be doing with, you know, the game. We've done the game shows, you know, we did the MLB The Show Jeopardy, and we've also been doing Versus. So today's Versus, we are talking closers from the 21st century. Two active guys and two guys who are making their debuts on the Hall of Fame ballot right now. We're going to start off the active guys. And the first guy we're going to talk about is the lefty flamethrower, Aroldis Chapman, who's had a very strong career. Alex, what are your thoughts on Chapman's career?
Well, Aroldis Chapman was really one of the first real great flame, at least in the very, very modern day, really made waves because of his electric arm, that he was able to hit 100, 102, 103, 104, and then even hit 105 on some pitches, which I believe for a while actually held the record for fastest pitch thrown. And there's like video of the pitch of that pitch. But since then, I believe that it has been broken. Don't fully quote me on that.
He still holds the record. It was 106, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think it was 106.5 was the newest record set by him. Something like that. Yeah. Anyway, regardless, that's still stupid. To think that someone could even try to hit a baseball to go in that fast is, you know, kind of incredible thing about. But he's also had a very interesting career. For a while, he was named basically the best closer in baseball for a good bit because of a few reasons. One, yes, he had that fastball of his, but also a slider that just moved like a frisbee. And then as well, on top of it, he's a lefty. A lot of times you don't see lefty flamethrowers. You're going to see lefty crafty guys. You know, you're mostly it's right-handers that are throwing at 100 plus miles an hour, but he decided to say, hey, my name is Randy Johnson. How are you doing? And just decided to be a flamethrower, and he was fantastic at it. There were definitely a few dips in his career where whether it be through injury or COVID, through all that fun stuff. But even then, when he's on the bump, he still has that menacing aura to him that you just know that he can still throw that fastball and make you look stupid during it.
Yeah, and, you know, I remember when the Reds first called him up, all the talk was that he was going to be a starting pitcher eventually, you know. I remember seeing the numbers in the minors that he was not meant to be a starter. And in 2012, after the Reds saw Francisco Cordero retire, Chapman took the closer's role and just ran with it. Absolutely fantastic numbers, you know, 7-time All-Star. You know, he finished 8th in the Cy Young voting in 2012. That was his first year as a closer. You know, a career 14.9 strikeouts per 9, 306 saves, 2.36 ERA with a 2.21 FIP. The biggest issue with him will always be the walks. You know, career 4.3 walks per 9. You know, it's a bit of an issue, but looking at his numbers, for his career, he struck out 41.1% of all batters faced. That is absolutely insane. The highest that number reached was 52.5 in 2014. To strike out over half the batters you face is unfathomable. You know, in the postseason, people think of him as a bit of a choker, but, you know, he's made a couple of, you know, not so great pitches in the playoffs, but really in the playoffs, he's a career 2.4 ERA and 10 saves. So he's not actually that bad in the playoffs. You know, it's just that his mistakes in the playoffs get amplified a little bit. And he did win a World Series in 2016 with the Cubs. So
yeah, exactly. That's kind of the thing right now is that there's that kind of where it's very much kind of impossible to try and fully quantify this. The clutch gene just isn't quite there a lot of times when it comes to the playoffs, because like you said directly, he doesn't make many mistakes, but when he does, they're amplified. Like again, he's given up a few game winning home runs, including 1-2-1 Jose Altuve that was very, you know, controversial, shall we say. We're not going to go into all that stuff today, but no, like Chapman's just kind of been that guy that you see him and you know, oh crap, I gotta just find a way to put bat on ball, because he's going, like you said, when you go up to the plate, you know, at that point you have at least a 40% chance of getting struck out, not even put ball in play. Getting struck out is one of the weirdest things to me, just from an outsider's point of view. Getting struck out is the ultimate saying, I'm better than you, because it does not let the defense do their work. It doesn't let anyone else do anything. It is man versus man. And when you get struck out, that's defeat right there. That is defeat. And the fact that he was able to win that matchup 40% of the time in that manner, that's impressive. And again, it goes all this where a lot of the times we say that being a lefty is a big thing, and it is, but remember, a lot of the times righties are what are good against lefties. The opposite usually favors the batter. And the MLB, if I remember correctly, I think it's around 60% righty hitters. It's somewhere around that number. So it is majority righty though. And that means that theoretically lefties shouldn't do as well, but yet he's still doing this at an incredible level. It did not matter if you were a lefty or a righty coming out to the dish. Aroldis Chapman was going to strike you out, and there's not much you could do about it when he was truly in his prime.
Yeah, and I'm also his fastball velocity. I mean, it seems like every year it was through the roof, and even it's come down a little bit. You know, then again, his four seamer averaged 98.3. This is on Baseball Savant, but his what they classify as a sinker, which I don't know if he actually throws a sinker, it says averaged at 100.7. So meet in the middle, something around 99 is his average right now. So he still throws hard. It's just he doesn't throw, you know, 104, 105 anymore. He can still dial it up to probably around 102, 103 when he needs to. But, you know, he's developed a couple of nice secondary pitches, particularly his slider, which I think is a really good pitch. The home run rate has gone up. You know, in 11 and two-thirds innings in 2020, he allowed two homers. Well, obviously limited sample size, so, you know, it's whatever. But this past year, he allowed 9 homers, which is the most he'd ever allowed in a regular season. Normally, he averages around 4, sometimes even lower. I mean, he's allowed as few as 1 in a regular season, so that's obviously, it's a little bit of a red flag because his numbers did drop off this year. His ERA went up to 3.36 and his FIP was up to 3.99. His WHIP was a career worst 1.314. So, I mean, yeah, that walk rate up to 6.1 walks per nine, not great. Still at 15.5 strikeouts per nine. So he can probably still be an effective pitcher for another couple of years, but I think that he isn't aging necessarily super gracefully. I think he'll be, you know, fine up until his mid 30s. But I think the other active player that we have, which we will get to in just a second, I think is aging a little better. But I mean, Chapman's nothing to take away from him. He's had a fantastic career through 12 seasons. Before we move on, any other final thoughts on Chapman?
Yeah. So when it comes to Chapman overall, like we've said, he has had a very interesting career. He's not aged the most gracefully, but when he is on, man, oh man, he is really, 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 really good. He's a very good lefty, but that's the big thing is that he is honestly one of the best lefty relievers we have seen in recent memory. Like, I can't think of another lefty reliever in today's game, in today's day and age, that has been as dominant, as scary to face as Chapman. And I want to make sure clear, lefty reliever.
Are you sure? I mean, what about Josh Hader?
I gotta be honest, I would put like Prime. It was like when you get Prime v Prime, I would put Chapman above Hayter.
Yeah, okay, actually, yeah.
That's just because I really like velocity. Velocity is something that I really put a lot of stock into. And when you have a good fastball slider combo and then mixing those extra secondaries along with it, Hayter's fantastic. Do not get me wrong. I want Hayter on any roster. He will make any roster better. But if I had to put the two against each other in their primes, I'm taking Chapman.
Okay, yeah. And I think obviously that eventually could turn into, you know, that can turn into its own versus probably, you know, it's because we're very early on or early-ish on in Hayter's career. So we don't know what he's going to turn into. Obviously, he's been fantastic himself, you know, through his first few years. But yeah, Chapman's been great. And I mean,
how did I figure about the best left-handed reliever, Brad Hand? I mean, obviously the best in baseball right now. The best.
I mean, that's Mets legend Brad Hand to you. Brad Hand, Aaron Loop. You know that you'll get other left-handed relievers who, and a Hand is another left-handed closer. I mean, then again, like you said, we haven't seen a ton of. You don't see as many left-handed closers. You know, I think in my lifetime, I'm trying to think. You know, there was, you know, obviously there's Chapman, there was Billy Wagner, Brad Hand, Glenn Perkins, I guess Andrew Miller was a closer too. You know, it's not as common, you know, so I get what you're saying. As of right now, I'd like to say Wagner is the greatest left-handed reliever of all time. So you see it. It's more rare, but anyways,
I would agree with you on that, at least, especially on the wire thing. On the Wagner bit especially, but yeah, I want to see what Hayter's going to do, because like I said, he is fantastic and he will make any roster right now better. But I think at the moment right now, if I take Aroldis Chapman in his absolute prime and put him against Hayter in what I think right now is getting close to his prime, then I take Chapman every day.
Yeah, I understand that. But anyways, moving on to the other active reliever we have, it's Kenley Jansen, who spent his entire career with the Dodgers. I think these two pitchers have had very similar careers. What's your take on Jansen?
So yeah, you hit the nail on the head that these two have had very, very similar careers, like to the point it's kind of hilarious. Really, you take a look at their career ERAs. There's a difference of 0.01, virtually no difference between the two when it comes to ERA. WAR wise, it's slightly more in Chapman's favor, but don't put that against Jansen. Jansen has had himself a fine, fine career and has done some amazing things. And I agree with you. He's probably aged a good bit better than Chapman has. Chapman has really started to fall off a little bit, but that doesn't mean that Jansen hasn't also been falling a little bit too. He still has been an amazing reliever where after the year 2013, he did not have a single season of less than 33 saves, except for the COVID year. We don't count that year because there was only 60 games to work with, which even in then still saved 11 games. So good on you. But I look at this and when Kenley Jansen has been on, he has been absolutely on fire. He has had some amazing games over that span of time where, again, much like Chapman, he didn't start out closing his first few years. He just kind of would close a game every now and then. He started out as the setup man role and then was moved to being a closer. And once he was moved to the closer, there was really no looking back. Though I will say, when it comes to Jansen, there are some warning signs that I worry about a little bit. Namely, in the fact of there have been a lot of times where he has just kind of fallen apart. There's been a lot of games where he just will completely blow it. And then we'll have other games where he'll go 1-2-3. Look at the stat lines. You don't really see that, though. You see that he's had some incredible numbers with him, including having a career strikeouts per nine of, 13.0, which is also very high. I mean, admittedly, you know, Chapman is a good bit better at 14.9. But seeing Jansen at 13.0, 13, you still can't fault it, you know? He's been a much more consistent reliever than I would say Chapman has. Chapman is definitely the, I think, has the better stuff. But Jansen was, I think, potentially a more well-rounded reliever. I did a lot of really good work, especially with also being pretty good at limiting the walks, having a career walks per nine of 2.6 as compared to Chapman's walk per nine of 4.3 career-wise.
Yeah, and I was going to say the strikeout to walk ratios on these guys. For Chapman, it's 3.46. So, you know, it's because of that 4.3 walks per nine. For Jansen, it's 5.01, you know, 13 strikeouts per nine against 2.6 walks per nine. I mean, I think from that perspective, I mean, when it comes to command, Jansen has a better stuff. I mean, like you said, Chapman has had an electric arm, and the velocity has always been up. It's just Jansen hasn't always been as reliant on velocity. And look, I get that, you know, Jansen could still throw hard, but you look at those years where his numbers started to fall off a little bit. 2019, his ERA was up to 3.71. 2020, the shortened season, down to 3.33. You look at the velocity on his pitches. After 2018, he only had three pitches recognized on StatCast: a sinker, a cutter, and a slider. And the velocity bottomed out actually in the 2020 shortened season, and only 92.3 miles per hour on the sinker and 90.9 on the cutter. And then in the 2021 season, you know, right when everyone thinks he's going to fall off and Brewstar Gratterall was next in line to be the closer, everyone thought, he bounced back with a 2.22 ERA, 38 saves, 86 strikeouts, you know, an 11.2 Ks per nine. You know, it's a little down, but his home run rate fell. Only 4.7 hits per nine, which, yes, he did have also 4.7 walks per nine, but his whip as a whole was lower, and his velocity went back up, actually. The sinker was back up to 93.9 on the fastball, on the velocity, and the cutter was up to 92.5 again. So his stuff sort of had a resurgence in 2021. Also, you know, he only is a three-time All-Star somehow. I don't know how he's only made three All-Star appearances, but he's also won the Trevor Hoffman Award twice, and he's the Dodgers all-time saves leader with 350 saves. So, I mean, when comparing these two, they're so similar, and honestly, I don't know which one is better. I mean, part of me thinks it's Jansen, but part of me also thinks that it could be Chapman. You know, I think Chapman is definitely more volatile, as shown by his walk numbers and, you know, sort of the disappointing 2021 season we had. But then again, you look at, I mean, Jansen and Chapman are also the same age. So they're really even. It could go either way. I think just slightly I'm going to give the edge to Jansen, but I completely understand if, you know, people do put Chapman ahead of him.
So that's the thing, you know, like, this is going to be one of the this is probably going to be, I think, the big debate between all four of these guys is which one of these two active players is better. You're on the Jansen side. I'm actually on the Chapman side, just because I'm not going to knock Jansen at all. He has been a fantastic reliever and is going to go down as one of the greatest relievers in history, and definitely is right now the best one in Dodger history. I mean, I look at what these two have done, and I like to always go to the in their prime, who is the best. And for me, it's Chapman. I'm not going to knock. I don't want to knock. I don't want to knock Jansen at all, just because you look at what he's done and you will feel safe in his prime. You see Jansen come out of the bullpen, you know, okay, this game's probably in the lock. Even if it's a 1-run lead, 2-run lead, 3-run lead, you know the game's in a lock. But if I had to choose between one or the other, I would have to go with Chapman. If you look at overall career-wise, that's where it gets a little bit harder, because I do think that Jansen has had a little bit better the overall career, like I said, a little more consistent. But it's really about putting the two together, and I, like you, I would not fault anyone for going either way with it. If I had to make the pick here, which we are for the sake of the show, because otherwise the show doesn't work, I pick Chapman.
Yeah, and also, oh, one more thing I wanted to point out. We talked about the postseason numbers with Chapman and with Jansen. His ERA is 2.13, and he has 19 career postseason saves. So also pretty good numbers. Also worth noting is that Kenley Jansen was originally a catcher in the minors. You know, he was a catcher when Clayton Kershaw was pitching in the minors. He actually was his battery mate. So the fact that he went from being a catcher to being one of the best closers in baseball is pretty impressive. Also, I wanted to point out his 2017 season in particular. You know, when you think of relievers, you think of, you know, the more wild guys with their control. In 2017, he had a 1.32 ERA, 41 saves, 109 strikeouts against just 7 walks in 68 and a third innings. That is a 14.4 Ks per nine against 0.9 walks per nine, giving him a strikeout to walk ratio that year of 15.57. That is unfathomable for a starting pitcher. That's even crazier for a reliever, I think. I mean, or you could go with the year before where his whip was only 0.67. I mean, how does a pitcher even do that?
I mean, with the idea of catcher turned reliever, Christian Bethencourt would like to talk to them to learn how to do that. So Rafael Bethencourt.
Yeah.
But regardless, no, that's amazing. I find it hilarious, you know, that especially when we look back on it now and how we could have seen the battery duo of Clayton Kershaw and Kenley Jansen. And now a lot of times we see the opposite of Clayton Kershaw getting all the way to the eighth inning for Kenley Jansen to come and end the game. So, you know, hey, it works, man. Also, top of it, that kind of gives a little bit more of an edge to Kenley, because as a catcher, you have to know how pitches work and you have to know how to work a hitter. You can take that mentality into being the full package as the pitcher, then, hey, that's a really good way to go. And that's a way that you can get a really smart reliever.
And also worth noting is that he probably throws the second best cutter of all time behind Mariano Rivera. His cutter is absolutely dirty, and he throws it, I think, with a little more zip than Mo did. So, I mean, that's definitely it's very fun to watch. Also, one of my favorite highlights I've ever seen is that surfaces the internet every now and then is when Kenley Jansen was the catcher for the Dutch national team in the World Baseball Classic, and he threw out Willie Taveras to end a game, stealing third base. And Willie Taveras was one of the fastest runners in baseball, so you could tell that Jansen always had a strong arm. Just that when he made the switch to being a pitcher, he really excelled. So, any other final thoughts on Jansen before we move on?
I'll give actually my favorite Jansen moment, and this is not what a lot of people think about. I just think this is funny. So, it's very common that if there's a runner on second base, that the second base guy will try to look at the catcher's signals to try and relay that to the batter so they can know a little more about what's going on here. And it was becoming very obvious that the guy on second base in this one game, I don't remember who it was relaying signs to the batter, and Jansen knew about it. And he eventually just was getting annoyed with it and then stepped off the rubber and then looked to the umpire and said, "I'm going to balk real quick." And he did. He did a balk. He said, "Okay, you get to third now." And he did. So they called a balk on him. The runner went over to third base. They got the third final out, won the game. And I'm like, all right, cool. This is the only time I've ever seen anyone do an intentional balk. And it's one of my favorite things I've ever seen. It's so cool.
Yeah, and you know, people always say that it looks like Jansen is balking every time he throws a pitch, but you know, he makes it work. So anyways, we're going to move on to the two guys who are on the Hall of Fame ballot for the first time this year. The first guy we're going to talk about, very fiery player, and you know, he may not be the most popular player amongst fans or even his teammates. It's Jonathan Papelbon, who actually, you know, people may not realize how great Papelbon was. You know, Alex, I know that you said you weren't a huge fan of Papelbon, but I mean, looking back at his career, what are your thoughts?
You
You really want to start with me and Papelbon? You really want to start with
yeah,
me?
Yes, and I want to start with you and Papelbon.
All right. Well, here we go. I'm one of those people that has vocally not been a fan of Papelbon. He is a good reliever. I'll give you that. But for me, I like players that aren't going to be absolute clubhouse cancers, like we have seen time and time again from Papelbon. The fact you cannot just go into your own clubhouse and then go and start a fight with one of your own players. You can't just do that. When you divide a clubhouse, that's one of the reasons that makes a team lose. I don't care how good of a team you are, but if you're not united, you're not winning. Like, we were talking about this before the show, during prep, and had Papelbon not gone to Washington, very, very truly could have been the number one guy on this list. Because you take a look at his last year with Philadelphia, so the last little bit that he had with Philadelphia, again, only a few games, mind you. 1.59 ERA. Like, at what, age 34? That's insane. You know, I get it that it was a smaller sample size. It was, what, 37 games? But that's still 37 games and an ERA of 1.59 and a FIP of 3.01. Like, come on. That's really, really good. I think that overall he is a little overhyped, though. He is a good reliever, a very good reliever, with an ERA of 2.44, a career WAR of 23.3, and striking out 808 batters with a career WHIP of 1.043. That's very good. Don't get me wrong. It is very good. I don't think that he is as good as I think other people try to make him out to be, especially now that this is his time on the ballot. I look at what he's got right now, and I try to compare it to some of the other guys. Okay, well, let's take a look at strikeouts per nine. He has a career 10.0 average on strikeouts per nine. One thing I'll also mention with that, though, is that from 2013 to 2016, he never once eclipsed 10. It was all below his average. Comparing that with, say, Aroldis Chapman, which I know may be a bit of an unfair comparison, but using it anyway, Chapman had nearly 5 more strikeouts per nine than Papelbon did. Let's take a look then now at walks per nine. Well, walks per nine was actually pretty darn good, 2.3, whereas Kenley Jansen's was a 2.6. So actually beat out Jansen, who we talked about as being a much more controlling pitcher. So you look at Papelbon, and he has been a very, very good pitcher, especially also take a look at his home runs per nine at 0.7, where Aroldis is you know at 0.6 and 0.8 for Kenley. He's a very good pitcher, don't get me wrong. He deserves to at least be on the Hall of Fame ballots, but I look at what he's done over his career and I see a very, very good reliever. But when you take a look at what they're doing and how they've won things, I feel like you have to put the attitude into play at some point. And I think that his attitude does hurt his candidacy, at least in this list, you know, because it really did hurt him on a lot of other times. And it doesn't help as well that his career at the very end of it really tailed off. He really had a tailspin to end the season, to end his 12-year career.
Yeah, and the thing is that basically from the moment he became the Red Sox closer, he was lights out. I mean, really only one rough season in 2010, but he was second in rookie of the year voting in 2006 to Justin Verlander and arguably could have won, you know, a 0.92 ERA. He had 5 WAR as a relief pitcher. That's almost impossible to have 5 wins above replacement as a relief. I understand we are using Baseball Reference for this, but I mean, that's a huge number. You know, he began his career with 7 consecutive seasons of 30 or more saves, topping out at 41 in 2008. He was a 6-time All-Star, you know, 4 of those with Boston, 2 of those with Philadelphia. He at times signed the largest contract for any relief pitcher ever with he got a 4-year $50 million contract with the fifth, with an option for a fifth year that was 60 mil, brought it to 60 million. So that was fantastic. You know, obviously it's hard to forget what happened in Washington, though. And that really, did throw a wrench into his career. I mean, he basically said the only way he was going to accept the trade was if he got to be the, if he was allowed to be the closer, because he wanted to break Mariano Rivera's save rate. And he never really had a shot at that. Yes, he finished with 368 career saves, but he was not going to break Mo's record. However, he also was the fastest player to ever reach 200 saves. So there's that. So you look at all these accomplishments and it's like, wow, he was really good. I mean, 12 years, that's the same amount of time that Jansen and Chapman have been in the league. And Papelbon had 368 saves, a 2.44 ERA, a 1.043 whip, a 2.81 FIP. I mean, he checks basically all the boxes of a great reliever. You know, that 2016 season when his ERA ballooned to 4.37 and he ended up getting cut, it's like, well, what exactly happened? And I understand his velocity did fall, you know, but you also can't forget about him choking out Bryce Harper at the dugout. But you also can't forget that he's also the franchise saves leader for two different teams. He's the leader for the Red Sox, and he's also the leader for the Phillies. So with all this in consideration, if we were just looking at the Red Sox and the Phillies years, he probably could be number one. And if he didn't go off the deep end after he went to the Nationals, he probably could be number one. But looking at this, I mean, I feel like he could be anywhere between two and four for me. I think I'm going to put him right behind Chapman. You know, it's really tough because I think he was great, but I think he could have been better. So
no, I totally agree with you on that. Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think that overall, if he did not go to the Nationals, just decided to hang it up or decided to sign, you know, somewhere else, then we very well would be talking about him being the number one. But the problem is we really can't just take that away. I've been the guy that likes to talk about the players in their prime. And, you know, I'll stand up on that. I'll stand up on that pedestal here. Because you take a look, and he's had some incredible, incredible years. But even with that being said, his best year save numbers-wise was 2008, where he had 41 saves. Okay, that's really good. That's very, very good. Well, Kenley Jansen has more. Kenley Jansen had 44 in 2014, 47 in 2016, and 41 in 2017. So if you take a look at the 1 year, what you have done, why, say, what have you done? That's, you know, very good still, yes, but there are others that have done it better. I took a look at the ERA wise. His lowest ERA that he's ever had in his entirety of his career, with one full year, because we have the total and then we have just one straight year overall, and where he played the most games and got them and still got a large number of saves, he did have an incredible year in 2006, where he finished a second in the Rookie of the Year and was an All-Star, finishing with an ERA of 0.92. That's insane. And that does put him a lot higher on the list. But then we take a look at other guys here. And Jansen, in his 41 save season, had an ERA of 1.32. So much better than Kenley. Then for Aroldis, his lowest, though, was in 2016 with the Cubs overall, where that entire season, mind you, was a 1.55. But that little bit of time was a 1.01. Other than that, his next lowest is in 2012, his real first year as being the guy, a 1.51 ERA. So you take all these, and Papelbon has definitely does exceed in some ways, but I'm going to be the guy here that says, you know what, I'm going to value the character a little bit. I got to value a little bit what he's done as a teammate, as a player, and I don't like what I've seen from him. There's a reason why he's earned some very, let's just say, nicknames that we can't say on air without getting, you know, fined. And I look at this and I just say, you know, I don't want him. As like, if I had a choice between these three guys, all in their prime, it would be hard not to select him, but I still wouldn't. I'd probably go with someone else because I also want to have someone that is going to not just be a complete cancer to the team. I don't want a guy that where he says, I want to be the only one here. I want to have a guy that's going to help me win.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about like off the field stuff too, I think the only one of these three guys, at least with that, is Kenley Jansen. Cause we can't forget that Chapman was also suspended for domestic violence back in after the 2015 season. So, you know, they both have checkered records, you know. Looking at Papelbon, I mean, from a saves perspective, he's obviously the leader of these three. And from 2006 to 2014, you know, so that's a 9-year stretch. He had 325 saves and a 2.35 ERA. So he was averaging 36 saves per season with 10.4 Ks per nine, less than one base runner per inning. He was, if you look at those 9 seasons, that's a Hall of Fame trajectory, you know. But those last 2 seasons, you know, his numbers were all right in 2015, but you could see the numbers start to sort of tail off in the strikeout department, especially after he got traded to Washington. So I think with that in mind, that tanks his numbers. And compared to these three right here, out of these three right here, he's the worst of the three, actually, looking at it. You know, I think he would have been number one until that 2016 season happened. Mm-hmm. So because of that, I have to put him at the end. Any other final thoughts before we move on to our last guy?
I'm with you that I put him at the very end of my list because, like I said, you know, I think we both took different paths to get to the same answer, which makes all math teachers feel absolutely horrible. But I like that with this, that there are a number of ways that we could talk about these players because, like, yeah, you're right. Chapman did have that, but he was not as much of a thing where it was not much thing where he caused on the field drama as much as Papelbon did. Yes, he did cause off the field drama, but on the field, it didn't translate. Whereas it directly translated on the field for Papelbon.
Yeah. And I mean, it was clear that, especially with the Harper incident, that it was a big problem. And also when he went to the Nationals, it was agreed that he would be the closer, and Drew Storen, who was having a perfectly fine season, did not do as well as a setup man. And Papelbon's numbers were not as good as Storen's. So he, in effect, kind of cost the Nationals a playoff spot that year. And also wasted a generational year from Bryce Harper. So, it's hard to support that. So, yeah, he goes at the end of the list. And we are going to move on. We have one more guy to talk about, as Joe Nathan, who, of these guys, you'd say he's the most, I guess the phrase would be, well-traveled, because he did play for 5 different teams. I think he was very underrated. What were your thoughts on Nathan's career?
For me, honestly, you know, Joe Nathan is one of my favorite relievers. I don't know. I grew up with certain video games, like, say, MLB Power Pros, like our also good friend of the show, Splash, did. And Nathan was always one of those guys that you just always loved playing with. Watching him get to play, I didn't get to watch a whole ton, I'll be honest with you. Because, again, when you're in Seattle, you basically only get to see Seattle Mariner games. This is before the advent of getting to watch any game you want basically at any moment. But I look at his career, and I really like what I see. But there's some interesting notes here that I find very funny, you know? Yes, he has the longest career of everyone talked about so far. That's because we have 2 active players and 1 that was done after 12 years due to basically being ran out of the league. During that time, Joe Nathan has the lowest strikeout per 9 of only 9.5 and actually has one of the highest walks per 9 of 3.4. Compare that to Aroldis's, which is higher at 4.3. Kenley Jansen's, which is at a 2.6, and Papelbon's, which is at a 2.3. So surprisingly high, especially for not having as high as strikeout numbers. You would think it would be the opposite, but no. And so seeing what he did there, let's take a look at ERA. ERA is something that I always like to look at. I know a lot of people don't, but, you know, that's just me. For his time there, he's had some very, very, very good years, including multiple seasons with a sub 1.0 sub 1.9 ERA. That's really, really good, guys. Like, that is insane good. I know that there was a lot of time for Joe Nathan where he didn't get to play a full season. He didn't get to play all that much. But you know what? When he played, he was on fire. Him and his slider, him and his fastball, it was just, it was beautiful watching him get to play and to see what he got to do. Like, I take a look at this. One thing that's really interesting, and I know this isn't like the biggest stat of all, but I personally like it. The game's finished stat that is on Baseball Reference. And why I like that stat is because as a closer, your job is to end the game. Your job is to slam the door, shut, lock and key, game over, let's get ready for tomorrow. He did that to an exceedingly strong rate, where in 2006, actually led the league in that with 61 games finished, but he would actually go on to have a few higher seasons than that, including 2 years prior in 2004, 63, 2 years later in with 62, and then 2 years after that for the next 2 years, 2013 and 2012, getting 61 and 62 games finished respectively. Right, you take a look at that and you see that it doesn't really happen with the other guys. Looking at Chapman, the highest he ever got to in games finished was 54. Kenley Jansen, how many games finished did he get in his highest? One time he got to 63. Then you take a look at Papelbon. How many games finished did he have? Well, he had one time at 62, one time at 64. So he does have the highest of everyone, I believe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it does have the highest of everyone, but he only did it. He only got to that 60 mark twice, whereas Nathan had, what did I say, 4 or 5 times where it happened? That's, come on. For the guy that you're going to see here, that you want to close the door, to end it all, to end everything, Papelbon was that guy. 377 career saves for him.
I think you meant Nathan.
No, sorry, yeah, Nathan, excuse my apologies. I'm talking about older relievers now, so I'm getting Nathan and Powell mixed up. I'm so sorry, Joe Nathan, my apologies. But I look at this and I just say with Nathan, dang, this guy was good. He was what it meant to be a closer. You close the game, you end it out. And he did that to an exceedingly strong rate.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel like you have to sort of have to divide his career up a little bit, because initially when he was first called up by the Giants, he was a starter, and he was not very good as a starter. He started out at a 4.18 ERA in 99, a 5.21 ERA in 2000. Then he, you know, he had injuries. I mean, he had a number of injuries throughout his career, but, you know, he had shoulder problems, so he – you know, he missed the whole 2001 season. You know, he missed basically all of the 2002 season before fully getting converted into a reliever in 2003, but he was still serving as the setup man for Tim Worrell. So, you know, we saw some of what he could be that year. And then the Twins made one of the best trades they've probably made in recent memory, or, you know, of the century, when they traded him. So they traded Joe Nathan, Booth Bonser, and Francisco Liriano. The Giants did. The Giants traded them to the Twins for A.J. Pierzynski. Pierzynski, you know, he played one season in San Francisco and was gone. Nathan, meanwhile, became a stalwart for the Twins. And, you know, Liriano became a pretty good pitcher, too. So I want to look at as soon as he became the closer for the Twins in 2004, Nathan was shut down. You know, 44 saves, a 1.62 ERA. He was an all-star for the first time. He even finished fourth in the Cy Young voting and 12th in MVP voting. You know, he also finished fifth in the Cy Young voting in 2006. The guy who won that year was his teammate, Johan Santana. So he also got MVP votes that year. So from 2004 to 2009, Nathan had a 1.87 ERA and 246 saves with 518 strikeouts and 418 and two-thirds innings. That is an average of 41 saves per season with a 1.87 ERA and an 11.1 Ks per nine. So that is that might be the best stretch of these four guys that, you know, But then he had Tommy John surgery and missed all the 2010 season and pitched very beat up in a shortened 2011 season, which he only got 14 saves and a 4.84 ERA. Bear in mind, he was 36 by this point. And then he signs with Texas and has two great seasons again. You know, he racks up 80 saves with a 2.89 ERA, still at 10.5 Ks per nine. So if we're going around the injuries and taking him as just a reliever, he was dominant. And then obviously he ended out with Detroit, you know, not a great year, 4.81 ERA, still got 35 saves in 2014 before more injuries happened. And then he actually gets a World Series ring because he was on the 2016 Cubs roster. And then he went back to the Giants and all that. So if we're looking at just his closers numbers, I mean, when he was healthy, there's a case for him to be number one. But if we're looking at his whole career, there's also a case for him to be number four on this list. I don't exactly know where to put him here. I mean, what are your thoughts?
So I look at these four guys, and I look at, again, who is the guy that I want to close out a game? And all four of them in their prime are great options, you know? All four of them have careers to where, like, their teams did not have to always worry when they came out of the dugouts. They knew that when they were rocking, the stadium was done. The game was done. They came in, did their job. Cool, let's get out of here. Go home. Go eat Pizza Hut. Like, go and do any of this fun stuff. But I look at these, and there's one guy that I think of when I think of great closes of these four that was able to come in, slam the door, and for the time when he was healthy, was able to slam the door, do it to an extremely good rate, and was able to make it all work out well for him and for his team, and that's Nathan. Nathan, I want to bring up something kind of interesting, you know? I talked a little bit about his 2006 season, you know, the time where he led the league in games finished with 61. The whole idea of coming in and finishing a game is what I like to see from a closer. Can you come in? The game will end when you are done pitching. In that season, he had 61 games finished. He played in 64. Only three times in that entire season did a game not finish when he was done pitching. That's insane. He did something similar a number of years later in 2012, where he finished 62 games out of 66. So very, very close. But I look at this, and other guys are, you know, they get kind of close. But I mean, I look at Kelly Jansen, 2015 was four away. But really, it's not that great. Like, Nathan was the definition of being able to say, I got this. Takes the ball, gets the people out, does not always need to strike out people to do it. Did not always need to go into effect. He averaged only about just a little over one strikeout every time that he went out on average. Like, that's good, but not great, like, on these levels. But he still found ways to get people out and to win games. And if, at the end of the day, that W is the number one stat that I care about. Did you win the game? Are you winning, son? And when Joe Nathan was out there, yeah, he did. He was an extremely good pitcher at doing just that. He was not a starter. He was a reliever, and he did his job.
Yeah, man, this is really difficult. Here's the thing. Also, we talked about how Jansen came up as a catcher. Well, Joe Nathan was actually a shortstop initially when he played at Stony Brook, which – he was the first player in Stony Brook history to make the majors. And because of that, the field, Stony Brook's field is named after him. It's Joe Nathan Field now. So, I mean, he's the all-time leader in saves for the Twins. He only played two seasons in Texas, and he's in the top 10 in saves there with 80. I mean, looking at just his Twins numbers. So, you know, he spent 7 years with them, and that includes that iffy 2011 season. He had a 2.16 ERA and 260 saves in seven seasons. That is averaging basically 40 saves per season, 10.9 Ks per nine, 204 ERA plus, 2.58 FIP, a 0.956 WHIP. Those numbers are fantastic. And then if you look at his Texas numbers, 80 saves in two seasons, the 2.09 ERA. He was an all-star both seasons he played there, which, by the way, he was a six-time all-star overall and won the Reliever of the Year award once. I mean, looking at those numbers, I think he might be number one, honestly. It's very difficult to put these four guys in order. I think we've established that Papelbon goes at number four, but number one between Nathan, Jansen, and Chapman, it's tough. But then again, looking at, you have to factor in Nathan's years, you know, as a starter, the injury-plagued years. At his peak, I think he's better than all of these guys, actually. You know, maybe he wasn't a flamethrower the way Chapman was. And, you know, his velocity, I mean, it could get up into the high 90s. You know, it was mainly, you know, mid-90s, low-mid-90s. But, you know, he's got the lowest strikeout rate of these guys, too. But I honestly might have to put him at number one now that I think about it. I mean, when he was in his prime, he was just straight-up dominant. It's really difficult to place him here.
I mean, look, here's the thing. We've already said, well, sorry, piece for me, I think it's pretty obvious. People know I'm on the Joe Nathan train. Joe Nathan is just really good. He's very, very good at baseball. He's a very, very good closer. I look at these three because we both established that Papelbon's number four, but all three of these are great for different reasons, you know. Aroldis Chapman was great for having overall the best stuff. Like, he has overall the best velocity that was able to make things work. You take a look at Kinley, and of the four, he had the best control. He had the best job where he was good at. He did not need to walk you, but he also did not need to have the highest velocity. And plus, I think actually I'm going to take back what I said a moment ago. I think Kinley has the best stuff because, like you said, one of the best cutters next to Mariano Rivera. And then you look at Nathan, who I think is the best closer of the three of them. He is the good best at shutting the door, at getting the game over and getting you into the dugout to be ready for tomorrow's game, which is exactly what I want in a closer. I don't like, this is one of the reasons why I liked Fernando Rodney. And I understand I'm going to get very heavily criticized for saying I liked Rodney. But one of the things, like, while he was bad, do not get me wrong, why he worked very well in Seattle for a while, and why he worked in a lot of other places for a while, why he still has as long of a career as he did, was that even if he made you scared, even if he did take a 3-run lead and make it a 1-run lead, he still ended the game and you ended with a win. You still got the win at the end of the day, which at the end of the day, with all of the stats that matter, the number one is your win-loss record at the end for the full team. And that is what was going to be better by having Nathan in. He was the best at doing exactly that. So it's kind of funny. I remember watching a while back ago, there was a documentary on the decision-making between Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning in the draft where they were picks 1 and 2. And it was trying to figure out who you take at number one. And after all these things, you said, oh, yeah, well, Ryan Leaf is got the stronger arm. Yes, he's faster than Peyton Manning, but Peyton Manning was the quarterback. And that's kind of the thing here, that one was just better suited at the job. And that's, I'm not going to say, obviously, that either, you know, that either Kenley Jansen or Errol Chapman or Ryan Leaf bust. Of course not. They're both amazing relievers. But if I had to choose the one, I'm choosing the closer.
Yeah, you know, we were talking about how Papelbon could have had a shot at the Hall of Fame if he, you know, if he didn't go off the deep end at the end of his career. You know, I'm looking at Joe Nathan's numbers, and I don't necessarily think he's going to be a Hall of Famer either. He's only got 2 votes right now. But I think he'd started his career as a reliever, you know, and his, you know, he didn't have all those injuries, he would have had a much better shot at the Hall of Fame. You know, 377 saves, you know, without, you know, all those years lost to injuries and all that, he probably could get up towards, you know, at least 400, if not up towards 500. I mean, I think it's interesting because we talk about, you know, of these four guys, I think probably Jansen and Chapman have the better chances at ending up in the Hall of Fame. And hopefully Billy Wagner gets into the Hall of Fame, because I think, you know, with if he gets in, then that'll sort of help all the other relievers or all the other closers get into the Hall who have been really good. So, you know, I don't necessarily think he's a Hall of Famer, but I think that Nathan in his prime had Hall of Fame stuff or had Hall of Fame numbers. No, obviously it's hurt by the other years, but we can't forget how good he was. And I do think he did get a little overlooked in his career because he's playing with guys like Rivera and Wagner and Gagne, you know, and even Papelbon overshadowed him, I'd say. So I think if I'm going to put these four in order, I'm going to go Nathan, Jansen, Chapman, and then Papelbon.
Yeah, so this is where we kind of disagree a little bit, but we've already kind of talked about this a little bit. I'm agreeing with you with number one and number four, although I have two and three switch, where I have Nathan as number one, Chapman is number two, Jansen is number three, and Papelbon is number four. Just because, you know, again, we agreed that Papelbon is number four, Nathan's number one, but I look at in prime which of these two I want more, because both of them have extremely similar career trajectories. Like, again, to the point where their ERAs are 0.01 away from one another. But which one was the guy that I was going to be most intimidated by? Which is the pitcher that I think had the most value between the two of them? Which for me, lefty, flamethrower, amazing fastball, and one with a strikeout percentage that if I needed to get someone out and make them feel demoralized from it, that's Chapman for me. So I put Chapman as number two. Kenley, if it was just Kenley's cutter, that'd be number one. But no, it's Kenley at number three and then Papelbon four.
Yeah, and also I want to point out one more thing is I think Nathan had a 3.4 walks per nine. So technically, he had the worst strikeout to walk ratio. Or actually, yeah, no, he does. But then again, with the Twins, his walks per nine was 2.6. And with the Rangers, it was 2.4. It was 4.8 with the Giants, which remember, he was also a starter for them. So there's that. And also it was 4.5 with Detroit. So, you know, it is what it is, but I still have him at number one. But anyways, we're coming down towards the end of the episode. Alex, any other final thoughts on anything we've discussed throughout this episode?
Nothing that we've discussed, because at this point right now, relievers are such a weird topic. You know, relievers are one of the positions that a lot of people going back into like the beginning of baseball, relievers were just failed starters. And nowadays, being a specialized reliever will get you more money on the market sometimes than a lot of starters will. If you are really good at getting those three outs or getting, you know, maybe six outs from that, if you're good at shutting the door of a game, you were going to get a lot more money than you were if you were a back-end starter. So you know what? I love how the game's evolved to make relievers as important as they are. And for these guys, these four of them, they've all made their mark on the game. Like, as much as we've even, you know, kind of talked down Papelbon, I mean, hell, he still is one of the best we've ever seen. And for that long stretch before he went to Washington, he could very well have been number one and is right now on the Hall of Fame ballot. So, you know, all these guys, insanely talented individuals, ones that have really shaped what it meant to be a good reliever.
You know, it's crazy we talk about money. Because Nathan is the only one of these guys who did not sign a mega contract. You know, the biggest contract he signed was with the Tigers, where he got a 2-year, $20 million contract. So, you know, it's not nothing. But then you look, Papelbon got 4 years and $50 million. You know, Jansen got 5 years and $80 million, if I'm not mistaken. You know, that was after Mark Melancon had just gotten 4 years and $60 million. So, yeah, so Jansen got 5 years, $80 million. And then Chapman got 5 years, $86 million, which is the largest contract given to a relief pitcher. So all these guys, except for Nathan, got massive contracts. It's kind of crazy to think about because, you know, I think, what is it? Papelbon set the record. And then Melancon broke that. And then Jansen broke that. And then Chapman broke that. And that was all in the same offseason, by the way, the three last contracts. So, yeah, it is interesting to see that. But anyways, That's going to do it for us today. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. You can follow Cheap Seats Chatter Twitter account at @OTH_CheapSeats. You can follow Alex on Twitter at TheSportsGuy242. You can follow myself on Twitter at Matthias_A_K. Make sure to follow the baseball department at Baseball_OTH. Make sure to keep tuning in all offseason long, even during the lockout. We will not be on pause. We will be trying to record every single week. But for everyone at Overtime Heroics, I have been today's host, Matthias Altman-Kurosaki. Thank you for listening. And I hope to hear from you all real soon.